Introduction to the Mahayana Text. Sharp Weapon Wheel. Part 4. All bad actions, and their encouraging five poisons, are in fact inseparable from emptiness. To live with the clarity of this insight frees us to be in samsara, but not of it. Wisdom is the basis for compassion. As the Havadra Tantra says, the one who knows the nature of poison dispels the poison, utilizing the poison itself. This view is set out at the beginning of Sharp Weapon Wheel, in the comparison between the peacock and the crow. Our afflictions and karmic tendencies make us vulnerable to the four maras, or troublesome forces. They have to be rendered inoperable if we are to awaken. Just as Prince Siddhartha managed, under the Bodhi tree, to avoid the hopes and fears, desires and aversions elicited by the maras, so must we. The first set of maras manifest as turbulence in the elements, dangerous animals, and other threats to life. They also manifest as our friends and enemies, evoking emotions of desire and aversion. The second set has no form, but arise as our own mental experience of memories, plans, and the many kinds of emotional turbulence we are prone to. The third set of maras work with the destabilizing effects of success, encouraging pride, complacency, disparagement of others, and so on. The fourth mara is the most dangerous, as it feeds the first three. This is the mara of belief in the ego. When we are under the power of this delusion, we experience all that arises in terms of how it impacts us. This attitude fuels the ceaseless turmoil of hopes and fears, and so we are without equanimity. In this present period of time, known as the Kali Yuga, the period of the demise of the teachings of Shakyamuni Buddha, ethics, analysis of phenomena, and meditation all become corrupted and fade. Behaviours that were formerly carried out in private are enacted in the public sphere, so that the shared public space is fragmented into individuals absorbed in their own phone world and indifferent to their co-presencing with others. The ethical sense of shared obligation and the mood of friendly supportiveness fade as isolation and selfishness creep in under the cover of intimate conversation with those who are not here. Feeling entitled to be myself wherever I am, irrespective of the feelings and opinions of those around me, I do not need to reflect on how I might be experienced by others. That's their business. I'm just being me. If they find me loud, or rude, or intimidating, or offering too much sexual display, that is nothing to do with me. The dulling impact of self-preoccupation brings a focus on what I want now, so that even if there is any analysis of the factors which generate our world, it is unlikely to be informed by any sense of karmic cause and effect. A purely materialistic interpretation of events is put forward by science, so that the mind is reduced to electrochemical activity. If my brain made me do it, then who is the moral agent? Meditation and calming concentration become rare in this busy world, and if they are practiced, it is only for stress reduction and greater efficiency in worldly pursuits. When the words awakening, enlightenment, and liberation are washed free of deep meaning, and the delusion that death is final is held up as the sole truth, then, dear reader, the sweet balm of Dharma is to be applied to the heart daily, while we still have the chance. In order to fulfill this radical reorientation, this transformation of my self-privileging and self-cherishing, I will abandon taking refuge in the objects of this world. No thing can give me the enlightenment I seek, nor the capacity to benefit others. Therefore, I will take refuge in the true path to awakening by taking refuge in Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. With the confidence that I am now never alone, but the Buddhas and great Bodhisattvas are always with me, I can turn towards committing my life to the benefit of others. I will develop this altruistic intention and then activate it by making it inseparable from my meditation practice and every aspect of my life. With this reorientation, our intention shifts from narrow self-focus to infinitely embracing all beings. We can affirm this by ceaselessly bearing in mind the four immeasurables. May all sentient beings have happiness and the cause of happiness. May all sentient beings be free of suffering and the cause of suffering. May all sentient beings never be separated from happiness free of suffering. May all sentient beings abide in the great equanimity, free of both attachment to those held close to them and aversion to those kept at a distance. These four qualities of love, compassion, joy, and equanimity are immeasurable because they are offered to all beings and can be enjoyed by all beings. In a deeper sense, they are immeasurable when the three wheels of actor, acted upon, and action turn within emptiness. Then we ourselves and our aspirations manifest like a rainbow, a form visible, evident, impactful, yet devoid of essence and substance. This applies equally to the objects of our aspiration. All sentient beings, however they appear and live, are like a banana tree, devoid of a centre, core, or defining essence. Moreover, the activity of making the aspiration is the movement of thoughts, feelings, sensations, breath, sound, none of which can be found as a real existent. The movement of the mind is ever-changing, just as the mirage moves away as we approach it. We each have had many lifetimes of getting lost, and so our tendencies towards self-abandonment within our assumptions and impulses are very powerful. For this reason, we need to devote ourselves to Dharma study, reflection, and meditation. However, we soon encounter the three pot faults. Sometimes we are like an upturned pot, and although our body is present, it is as if our mind is coated in Teflon and nothing gets in. Sometimes we are like a pot with a hole in it, so that all we train in and commit to leaks away. And sometimes we're like a pot with old food in it. No matter what new delicious dharma we receive, we mix it up with our old ideas and so become confused by this toxic meld. It is time to be less concerned with the never-ending drama of worldly affairs. These issues and problems will never be sorted, and so if we attend to them, we will be endlessly disturbed. As the Tibetan saying has it, it is easier to cover your own feet with leather than to try to cover the whole road. To do this, we have to be vigilant. As Shantideva says in The Way of the Bodhisattva, all you who wish to protect your mind must sustain mindfulness and mental vigilance. Guard both, even at the cost of life and health. This I request of you with joined hands. Generally, we need to be mindful of habits, urges, complacency, and the many kinds of misleading thoughts and feelings that arise. How many times have we encountered a new situation, a friend, partner, a job, and thought that now we were safe, now we were sorted? But all compounded things are impermanent. The outer phenomena of the world and the inner contents of our experience are all impermanent and unreliable. Therefore, we have to see again and again how we take refuge in the unreliable and forget the true refuge, which is reliable. So when we read or recite this text as a Dharma practice, we should begin with the refuge and bodhicitta and end with the dedication of merit. Whatever good thoughts and deeds we do, whatever merit and virtue we generate, we offer to others and commit ourselves to their welfare. The deep refuge is to abide in awareness of emptiness. As long as we're struggling to diminish negative thoughts and increase positive thoughts, we are like someone trying to destroy a tree by taking off the leaves, one at a time. Life is short. We need to cut the root of the tree of duality. We need to constantly attend to the absence of inherent existence in all phenomena. This means our body, voice, and mind, all living beings, and all forms of nature, all rocks, aeroplanes, everything, everything. This text is easy to understand, but difficult to live. It is full of wonderful images, through which, without pejorative judgment, all our many faults and foibles are laid bare. In order to let the meaning seep into the marrow of our bones, we have to be available and insightful. We promote availability through sitting quietly and focusing on the sensation made by our breath at our nostrils. Whenever our attention wanders, we simply bring it back to our intentional focus. The more we do this, the more peaceful and less distracted we are. And so we become available for Dharma and wisdom, and for other beings and compassion. We develop insight or clear seeing by attending to what is actually going on. The more we attend to phenomena as they reveal themselves, we come to see that our seemingly illuminative commentaries were actually just a veil to the simplicity, beauty, and freely given richness of appearance as it is. Now the world can dissolve into the Buddha mandala. End of part 4. From the book Finding Freedom, introduced and translated by James Lowe. Part 4 of 5 parts, read by Wendy, May 2024.